Hello and welcome back to Multifaceted Mama. I'm now officially a mum. I'm in my fourth trimester. I've got my beautiful baby girl, Penelope Ada Scott. We are so in love with her and it's quite surreal. I find myself just staring at her and being like, I can't believe you're mine. The third trimester went by so quickly. I was on placement and writing essays for my master's degree, and I ended up working a few days just before my due date, which to begin with I was really apprehensive about because I wanted to have a few days or a few weeks just to chill. But I actually ended up being quite overdue, so I did have quite a few weeks before she came to, well, I say chill, I didn't do much chilling at all. I probably will do an episode on my birth at some point. I do talk about it a little bit in this episode, and I will put a trigger warning on this episode as the birth didn't go quite to plan. And just for anyone that's listening that is due to have a baby quite soon, I wouldn't want to scare anyone or worry anyone. And obviously this is my story and everybody is so different. Just question everything and just know that you are in your right to ask those questions and to empower yourself with lots of knowledge and do your own research, because at the end of the day, it is your body and your birth. My guest on this episode is the wonderful birth and motherhood empowerment coach. You can find her on Instagram at the Bloom Me Experience. Claire provides support to new mums both during their pregnancy and postpartum. She takes a holistic approach preparing ladies for birth using methods like hypnobirthing and empowering women to feel in control and beat any fear surrounding birth. She also provides sleeping and feeding support during the postpartum period.
Hi Holly.
Hi. Thank you so much for being a guest on my podcast. I know we've been wanting to speak for a while.
Yeah, no, it's lovely actually, isn't it, to connect with people. I always find that with social media that it can almost be quite standoffish unless you are open to making new connections, and I'm so pleased that we connected. And obviously, you know, you having baby Penelope as well, which is so lovely to watch your journey. So it's just, it was a definite yes for me. And you know, I'd love you to come on mine as well, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
Like a swapsies. So yeah, I'd absolutely
love that. Yeah. So I was just having a look through and I remember when we first spoke, I think when I was just about to pop, and bless you, you were sending me through like helpful tips and you were saying, if you're still with child on by Saturday, let me know and I'll send you some more stuff over. And I was like 42 weeks still with child.
Oh god,
what a journey. But thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate that. I did actually look through what you sent me and I'm not joking, I think I ticked everything off the list. I think I did absolutely everything to try and induce myself.
Encourage.
Yeah.
And babies are so funny because, you know, we always put this, I think you're in that mindset though. I think from what I was watching and viewing on your stories is that you were very much like, she'll come when she's ready.
Yeah.
But babies do tend to just do what they want.
Yeah.
And although I think the thing that puts that pressure on us is we have the scans, which obviously, you know, some women don't decide not to have scans, but most women do, because I think it's that reassurance. And I think they feel that if they couldn't continue through their pregnancy without knowing that baby's all fine, and you know, everything's healthy. But actually when we have that date in our heads, like, oh, my due date is on this day, regardless if you are like a birth fanatic like myself, and that's my profession, I still remember with my fourth child is thinking, okay, I haven't been pregnant for this long ever. Mm. Like, when is my baby going to come arrive? And, you know, when you're heavily pregnant, you are riddled with hormones going up and down, fluctuating, stopping, starting. And actually we don't do ourselves any justice because we can't start questioning our own bodies. But for your situation, you are right at the end of where we say you're kind of full term, 42 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point you do get lots of pressure from your healthcare professionals as well. And actually, you know, some women just say, hey, I'm more stressed being pregnant than I am not now, so I'd like to take that first step into induction, which is totally fine as long as they feel empowered to do that, which you absolutely did. Then that was the right journey for you.
Yeah. I was booked in for an induction at 41 plus, I can't remember what it was. And I remember already saying to the midwife, because I had a sweep and I didn't even want that. That for ages I was like, no, I'm just gonna wait. I don't want any sort of intervention. But I remember going to my appointment, one of the last ones, and they were like, look, if this time next week you're still pregnant, then we've booked your induction. And it was kind of the woman, like the midwife booked that even before I had time to say, well, no, I don't want the induction booked. And it was at 41. I can't remember exact timings, but it was 41 plus a few days. And that baffled me because I thought even that is a bit of pressure, isn't it? Before you've even got to 42 weeks.
Yeah. And I, you know, I see it from kind of all perspectives because if you think of like, I kind of always wanted to be a midwife. I'm not a midwife, but I always thought, you know, and these midwives want to do that from, they kind of wake up one day and go, this is what I want to do. And they think of it's this most wonderful job being with women, supporting them through their pregnancy and birth. And then they get into the role and understand that there is so much red tape around childbirth, because we're in such a blame culture and society now that if they have to follow the guidelines, otherwise they could be struck off, or you know, there's lots of negligence claims and things like that. So you know, I mean, the World Health Organization suggests that a woman's pregnancy is at full term anywhere from 37 to 42 weeks. That's a 5-week window. Mm-hmm. But to cover their backs, the midwife should inside be thinking, you know, actually, this woman is happy, but because of protocol, they have to book you in for that induction. And I mean, you can obviously have rang up and cancel it if you want to, but it's, some women don't even know about that. You know, they don't understand that I don't have to go for that induction, or they feel that because somebody that is qualified in childbirth is suggesting that, that is the right option and they have to listen. But, you know, it is such a shame. It is such a pressure that they book you in from that stage. You would think that maybe from 42 weeks, and then they say, well, right, okay, maybe we'll look at booking you in for an induction if that feels right for you. Did you get offered extra monitoring?
So I was booked for my induction at, I think it was 41 plus 3 or something like that, and then so I went in and I was in hospital for 3 days, but I didn't get offered monitoring, thinking back, no. They said if I didn't accept the induction, then they would look to do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I went in on the Tuesday. Penelope was delivered on the Friday morning, and it was just like the longest process of like pessaries and I think it was frosting or something they called it, the last one, because I had 2 pessaries and then something else. So that's how like stubborn, not, I don't know if it's stubborn, but my body wasn't naturally going into labour, even despite these interventions. My body was like, nope, I'm not ready. Like even this pessary and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and that can sometimes be the case. We know that the statistics and studies show that if you go for an induction, you are more likely to need a C-section and forceps or you know, instrumental delivery, which is a shame. And some women feel that, you know, oh, I'm going in for an induction, I'm going to have baby by the end of the day, and that's your perfect example that actually that isn't the case, because when you go into labor naturally, you know what tends to happen is your baby's lungs are fully developed, they release a protein into the amniotic fluid, which then sends a signal to your pituitary gland, your body works together, and then it triggers labor. So like your contractions will start, they'll ebb and flow, and your body and your mind will get used to the buildup of them. Whereas when you go for an induction, because it's a synthetic hormone that they're using, your body isn't used to this hormone. It's kind of alien to the body, so your body reacts slightly differently. So I completely take my hats off to women that are having inductions, because you know, it doesn't necessarily mimic natural labor. Well, and it's hardcore, not just on your body but on your brain. Like, you know, how did you feel over those 3 days? Were you really frustrated that things weren't progressing? Or
oh yeah, awful, honestly. I think I cried so much, and every day I was crying. And they were saying, obviously, you need oxytocin and you need all these happy hormones. And I was anything but happy. I was miserable and I hadn't slept. And because I was on the induction like part of the ward, I kept hearing all these ladies going into labour all night. They were coming round and putting us on heart rate monitors. So that was really loud, you know, like the heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And I was just up and not sleeping. And it got to, I think, Wednesday, and I cried to one of the midwives and I was like, if I go into labour, I do not know how I'm pushing a baby out because I am exhausted.
Oh,
and it's days and days of no sleep before you've even got into labour. So yeah, it was awful. Honestly, it was horrendous. Looking back, obviously, I wish I'd found you earlier. And I did try and empower myself with lots of knowledge. And I did read lots of stuff. Like I kept saying to the midwives, like even before I accepted the induction, no, I don't want to be induced because I know that it can, or it's more likely to lead to, like you said, forceps and instrumental delivery and even a C-section. I'd read so much and I knew that was the case. But I felt so much pressure, and sort of as the days ticked on and I just nothing was happening, I just, yeah, I think I just caved in and accepted it.
And, you know, but that was right for you. You made that decision that was right for you because, I mean, some women also feel really sad that they had an induction. And I think as long as you have made that decision yourself and gone, like you did the investigating, you did some research, and actually, like I mentioned earlier, it's what's right for you at that moment in time. Because would you have continued? I mean, I don't know. I'm not inside your body, but would you have continued another 2 or 3 days and triggered labour naturally? I mean, babies are obviously going to come out at some point, but, you know, or would you have just been god awfully miserable as well? And I'm not endorsing inductions and you know, the inductions are there for a reason, but I think, you know, as long as you felt that this is the right decision for me, then it definitely is the right decision for you. And did you have a positive did you have a C-section in the end?
Yeah, it ended with a C-section, but so just before, because I will go into that actually, but just before we do, I wanted to ask you, what is the, like, what are the stats? Or I don't know, I was told by the midwives that your placenta starts to pack up and that's why they want to induce you. I don't know how true that is, but I was told all these things like, yeah, it just gets more dangerous. And actually, Penelope had pooed inside and they told me that that was just because her bowels had like fully developed and because I was so overdue, whereas someone else has said to me, no, the induction would have done that, would have stressed her out. So yeah. It's so difficult to know. Had I continued the pregnancy, would it have still been meconium? Would she have been sat in that for days and it could have led to infection? Was it the right thing that I did, you know, accepting the induction? Or was the fact that she pooed a result of them inducing me? Who knows?
So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, we haven't got, like, a crystal ball. Induction can put, obviously, stress on baby because it's not a natural process. And it depends on the type of induction. If your water's broke, you're more likely to have meconium your baby's more likely to poo. There's lots of different studies on different types of induction, so it is kind of that whole who knows. But I can't remember what you said. What were the statistics on? Sorry, what were
your... Oh, so like in regards to your placenta, placenta being lethargic,
yeah. So, you are within your right when you get to 41 weeks plus is to opt to have some extra monitoring. So they can do that to check they can do that either through like through a scan, and they can check the cord flow into the placenta. You know, women give birth at 43 plus weeks and have beautiful, gorgeous, blood-filled placentas.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a scaremongering because I've heard also that women have said, my midwife has told me that my placenta is going to fail and that my baby's going to get too big for me to birth.
Yeah.
So that's a massive contradiction because the placenta feeds your baby. If the placenta fails, how can your baby continue to grow?
Yeah,
it's mental. So I always suggest to women that if if they have been told this, then to ask for evidence. Okay, can you signpost me? Can you show me where that there is evidence to suggest that is the case? Because they'll be really hard to find that. Yes, organs have a lifespan. I'm not sort of saying that to go to, you know, I doubt very much anyone's ever gone to 46 weeks pregnant. That would be...
I've not heard of anyone.
Oh my dear God. But I think you do have to question a lot of things. And it's really hard because you feel almost as if you're... These people are the experts. They're the experts in their field. And why would they suggest something that isn't of your best interest? But sometimes it's more to cover themselves rather than, and I'll probably get shot for saying this, than to make sure that mum and baby is okay. Because, and again, I'm probably going to get shot for saying this, there is more to birth than having a healthy baby. We always, always want a mum to have a healthy baby. But the process in which the mother goes through pre, during and post birth is so incremental to that baby's upbringing as well, because they absorb, you know, the energy. And that's not the hippie in me saying that. You know, there have been studies done on babies' microbiome and how mother is feeling before and during labor and postpartum, of how they are you know, fighting off illness and disease and things like that. So there is so much that has gone into that. But there is more to birth than just having a healthy baby. We want mums to, because the post-traumatic stress from having a baby, the levels are rising and rising and rising, which is really frightening, because that affects mothers' bonds to their babies. It affects how they are within themselves, their relationship with their partner, the relationship with their friends. If, you know, it affects everything. Yeah. So I do say question everything when it comes to birth, which we shouldn't have to, but you should, because you are the person responsible for your birth, not someone else. Midwives are they're with women, they're caregivers, you know, but taking that responsibility and finding out all the information on every like little suggestion that has been suggested to you from the midwife is really important, to find out the information about that.
Yeah, definitely. I got to the point actually where I was saying, well, what's the risk of that and what's the benefit of me doing that? Because I felt like I was just prodded and poked for like 3 days up until that Friday where they were like, right, we're going to break your waters. And that's when, and so none of mine was natural at all. And I think, like what you're saying, I do believe in that, like your energy. Like if I was feeling really emotional, of course my body wasn't going to go naturally at that point, even after having a pessary and all the rest of it, because I was stressed. And then so they broke my waters after my, I think, third day of induction, because I kept saying, oh, it's a failed induction, and they were like, no, although you've not gone into labor, your cervix is now softened so we can manually break your waters. So off I went and had my waters broken, and then that's when they saw, oh, there's meconium, she's pooed. And then I kind of labored for 5.5 hours, but my contractions were quite far apart, so I wasn't dilating enough. And then it was a case of, right, we need to get baby out.
Yeah, it's almost like a domino effect, isn't it? You know, when that initial intervention, and then everything else kind of comes with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you know, they must have thought that for a reason, for, you know, obviously meconium in the waters. They worry about you know, baby inhaling the meconium and getting onto her lungs, which can be really dangerous. So they obviously thought at that time that was the safest option for you. And for you, you know, you're really vulnerable in that stage, so you're not going to turn around and go, no, it's fine, I'm just going to continue and do what I need to do.
Well, they were heavily monitoring me at that stage, but actually, I felt like I probably pushed the C-section more than they did, because they wanted to put me on a drip, but only for a few hours, because they were like, if we put you on the drip and they were like, you need an epidural because it is going to be painful, but we can only give you a few hours on the drip to even fully, you know, birth her because we're worried about the meconium. So it's all these stresses. And I started to like hyperventilate and I was shaking because I was like, this is just now. So I felt so out of my control.
Yeah.
So I did, enough's enough. I've had enough interventions, enough days in the hospital. I was like, I just need to get her out. So I actually pushed for the C-section more than they wanted to give it to me.
And that's empowering for you to feel that I actually, you know, because the oxytocin drip is not nice.
No.
Some women are really great on it, but it goes from, it can, you know, excel really, really quickly and make your contractions go from kind of just ebbing and flowing to like, I'm here, like within, you know, a really short space of time. So you did what's right for you. So, and in all of that, you know, emotional state and worry, you did the right thing for you at that time. So, kudos for you for taking that ownership of your birth back, because you know, some women will be completely like, you know, in this dark cave, unable to even speak at that moment.
Thank you. Yeah. It got to the point where I was like, everything's been out of my control. I'm now taking control and I'm, you know, I'm going to go for the section. Because even the thought of, like you said, being on the drip, everything speeding up, being in a world of pain, and then in the end for them to say, oh, we need to section you anyway, because unfortunately, you know, it's not happened quick enough and the meconium's a problem. And I just saw that. I visioned it and thought, I don't want to be rushing down the corridor for an emergency C-section if it gets to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was your, how was your partner through this? Was he kind of like, oh my goodness, what's going on? Was he there with you?
Yeah, he was there like all the way. He's very calm and chilled anyway. So he, like, I could tell he wasn't obviously calm and chilled in this moment. But as, particularly when I went off to, because I went into theatre and then he waited outside and then he joined me. Mm-hmm. But it was only like a sort of a few days after she was born, he said to me, I couldn't stop shaking. Oh. I was just so worried. And I think we both felt, like, we didn't feel that euphoric moment when Penelope was born. Like, it wasn't, because he was so worried about me and I was a bit, I was in shock. My body was, I remember my body kept lifting off the table and I was saying to one of the doctors in theatre, sorry, I can't stop shaking. And they were like, you're just in shock. So I think we were both, you know, in this, like, weird bubble. So when she was born, it wasn't, we thought we both would cry and we'd be like, oh my God, she's born. Whereas it was only sort of a day after that we were like, oh my God, like, we've had a baby, because it was just so, so surreal.
Yeah. And I think because you had pushed out and kept going through your pregnancy for so long, that you perhaps didn't expect it to for you to feel that kind of shock, you know, and go through that period of time through labor where it was like a whirlwind, really.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was like, looking back now, I'm just like, oh my God, like, I would love to have more babies. Hopefully I can give Penelope a sibling in the future. But I actually feel now like that I'd be worried getting to the third trimester, because I feel like I would think back to my experience and be scared about what was to come. So I guess that's where you come in, really, because you help women feel empowered in pregnancy. So let's talk a little bit about that, what you do and how you help people.
Yeah, so I'm a birth coach, which people say, you know, what does that mean? So I teach an antenatal course, which has a hypnobirthing foundation. And I think a lot of people think that hypnobirthing is burning your bra, dancing around trees, swimming in the River Thames, giving birth in it, you know.
I did a bit of hypnobirthing, so I know it's not.
Yeah, it really isn't. It's all about how the mind affects the body, you know, and actually there are so many things that you do in an everyday life that what you do with your mind that actually has an impact on your body. So there is evidence in that already. But it's it's more, I teach women to feel, like I said, like empowered through their pregnancy and birth, to take control of it. And when I say take control, obviously your body is going to give birth to a baby, but taking control of your options, your choices that you make, and you feeling happy, whether that is a C-section, an induction, or, you know, a home birth or a water birth, whatever that may look like for you, feeling that you're happy and empowered. And the course that I teach is, like I said, it's a complete antenatal course, but I really involve the partners as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that when a woman goes into labour, if her partner is with her and they get it and they understand and they know how they can support her, she will labour so much more confidently and happier, which in turn helps labour to progress. But I also teach women lots of things about their hips and how they can do lots of exercises to support their hips in labour, like if labour stalls, and just understanding their bodies and what actually happens, so that if something does happen in labour, that it's stalling or baby's not in the optimal position, that they have the skills and the knowledge to get into that optimal position.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also a maternity nurse as well. So postpartum, I can support mums that are absolutely on their knees thinking, I really need a rest, or I have no idea how to bath my baby, or I just need someone to be around and feed me and give me cups of tea, and just to be that kind of support to what I wish all mums could have, because I think the postpartum period is so important. I mean, you're really early postpartum stage still, aren't you? So having someone extra with you just to guide you, and it just, you know, have baby for a couple of hours whilst you sleep is so important, because it, you know, I always say, if mum's not right, then no one in the household is right.
No, definitely. I've been really lucky, actually, because my partner did a bit of hypnobirthing with me, and we were doing breathing techniques. So I knew that, well, I thought I was going to have a really nice water birth with hypnobirthing. I had my essential oils packed, and I knew that he was so supportive, and he'd done breathing techniques, and he knew how to kind of guide me through it. And then postpartum, again, like, he had a month off, and it's just been really supportive, and like, I hate to say hands-on, because I feel like every dad should be, but he's amazing. He would take baby, and because I'm breastfeeding, he'll burp her and change her nappy and do lots of the night feeds if I've expressed, so he can give her a bottle. So yeah, I'm really lucky.
Amazing.
In that sense. Yeah, but I can imagine so many women are like on their own, and I honestly don't know how I would have got through without him, to be honest.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? That mum, dad, dyad with baby is so, so important, that you kind of prepare for that before have baby, because I don't think anyone can prepare you for the first 6 weeks, 12 weeks of being a new mum.
Oh my God, it's crazy, isn't it? I honestly said this to him yesterday. I think we went out for an evening stroll, and I said to him, like, do you think it's harder than you'd expected, or what, like, how are you finding it? And he was like, no, I don't think it's harder. And he was like, I think we're both shocked by the sleep deprivation, because I used to fly. So I used to say, oh, you know, I've had jet lag, and I've experienced what it's like to be so severely sleep deprived. But then at least I could get back after a trip and catch up and sleep lots. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is like never ending, and I don't know when I'm going to get a full night's sleep again. And I just think to myself, oh my God, that is crazy. Like, the fact that there's no kind of catch up. Like, luckily I've got my mum here at the moment, so she is helping, and I feel like I'm getting a little bit more rest. But even so, you think, oh my God, how long is this going to go on, and when am I ever going to get a decent night's sleep again? It's very intense.
It's hardcore. You can understand why they say, like, sleep deprivation is the form of torture, because it really is. And then they like, you start hallucinating. Like, I don't know about you, but I used to pull my babies in bed with me, feed them, and then pop them back into their crib next to me, And then I'd wake up thinking that I'd rolled on top of them in the middle of the night. You know, this sleep deprivation just absolutely sends you like double guessing and slightly nutty. It's so, but actually also on the other side of the spectrum is how you can actually function. So how you can brush your teeth and actually how you can get up and put some pants on and walk down the stairs and make some toast. Even doing those simple things, I think, wow, it's amazing how we can still actually function.
Yeah, no, definitely. And particularly for me, because I obviously didn't expect to have a C-section, not being able to kind of pick her out of her cot and like hold her properly to feed, and that was like even more intense the first few days. Well, the first few weeks, actually. I'm only now kind of getting a bit faster on my feet and able to do, well, I'm still not able to lift, you know, the pram, and we've got steps coming up like down to our front door. So without my mum, when she goes next week, I don't think I'll be leaving the house, because you don't realize the things that you can't do when you've had a section. And even getting out the house anyway, regardless of how you delivered, it's crazy. I'm like, how do people do it?
I know. And you hear people talk about it, don't you? And you actually think, oh, yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, some days you think, right, I'm ready to go. And then, oh, they've been sick. Oh, they've done a punami. Oh, okay, they need to be fed again. Did I do this? Did I pack that? And then it's like, takes you 3 hours to get out of the house. And then it's like, oh, my goodness.
It's like, no point.
Yeah, it's just easier to stay at home sometimes.
It is crazy. I don't think anyone can prepare you. I think you just have to experience it for yourself, don't you? And also, I remember people saying, like, food prep now, like the last few weeks of your pregnancy, just get loads of food prepped and freeze it. And I thought, oh, how hard is it going to be? Like, I'm going to be able to make some food. I'm going to be able to, wow, it would get to like 1 p.m. and I'd be like, oh, I've still haven't eaten anything today. It's just crazy. And when you're breastfeeding as well, that's intense, because obviously you need to be eating and drinking lots.
Yeah, it is intense, but especially when you've got like a little barnacle stuck to you all the time, which is so lovely. But when you actually think, oh, I just need some food, and you then become this expert in eating with one hand and your baby is covered in pasta sauce from where you're eating, and you have to make sure it's the right perfect temperature, it's like just a tiny bit warm in case it does drop on them. It is crazy. But I think, like you said, that your other half it took a month off, and then you've got your mum. How lovely is that to have that extra pair of hands?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you feel that you're like, you happily hand Penelope over, or do you think that, do you have this mindset of, I can do it, I'll feed her, and then, oh, it's fine, I can have my cup of tea while I've got her? Are you quite kind of, take her, I'm you know, relishing in some free time? Or do you still, even though they're there, do you still keep her really close to you all the time, and you not really take her much help?
I think in the beginning I was like wanting to do everything, and I'd be like, no, it's fine, even when people were offering to take her so I could eat and things like that. But now I've got my mum here, like, even being able to record this with yourself now, I'm definitely a bit more like, no, you know, an hour to myself it will do me good. This morning I was able to do like a few stretches and have a shower whilst my mum had her, and I made sure I fed her beforehand. So I'm definitely now starting to get like, not used to having someone help me, but I'm being a bit more relaxed with it.
Yeah.
I think it's important, isn't it, to have, like, to accept help, because otherwise you go a bit crazy.
My God, yeah. Like, obviously keeping baby close and having that bond, because when you're breastfeeding, that's so important. And even when you're, you know, bottle feeding, formula feeding, that's important as well. But remembering parts of yourself, because, you know, people say, oh, I've lost myself. Well, you've evolved, and you have to find this new person. You're not necessarily who you were before, but you've also gained this new person into your life. But also, you know, the single person has now left your body, and now the mother has entered. Yes. So you've just got to find yourself again. And I think having those times out where you can have a nice hot shower, and, you know, do a meditation or just have a stretch like you've done this morning, is so important, because it makes you feel like you're finding this new person. It's just, it creates that healthy mindset as well for you.
Yeah, definitely. That was always one of my biggest fears. Because I've always known I wanted children, but I used to get really worried about the fact that people say they lose themselves and you just become mum and that's it. And I've always said, and that's kind of why I created Multifaceted Mama, because I was like, I'm never gonna allow myself to get lost and just be mum when you can still, obviously it's very difficult. And in these early days, I'm definitely not Multifaceted Mama. I'm literally just being mum. Well, I kind of am, because I'm breastfeeding and doing all these other things at the same time, but it is solely like motherhood. But yeah, it used to really terrify me hearing that, because I'd think, oh God, like I've always, you know, just been a bit selfish and just looked after me and thought about myself. And now I've got to think about this tiny human 24/7. So yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I'm just riding out this first bit, and I'm actually surprised at how well I've adapted to it, because I did really think I would get really low and feel a bit trapped, but I'm just embracing every cuddle, every feed, and yeah, I've adapted really well to it, surprisingly to myself.
Yeah, and it is hard. It's so blooming hard. But my close friend always says to me, because I've got four, and she's like, oh my goodness, like you keep having babies, and I'm like, yeah, this is definitely my last one. But when you've had when you get to like every week, although when you're in it you can't see it, but every week you can, if you step back and go, well, I couldn't do that on day one, I couldn't do that on day two, I couldn't do that on the first week, you know, like taking some time out to have a shower or doing some stretches, you find that every day, because it is bloody hard being a new mum, it is hard.
Yeah,
I don't care what anyone says, it is the most mentally and physically draining thing you can put your body through. It is, because you put someone else first before you every single minute of the day. But it does get better. And if you can take a step back and go, wow, well, I'm so grateful because I managed to have a hot shower on my own today, you know, without baby there and the bouncer at the side of the bath screaming, and you're like, I'm coming, and your breasts are leaking everywhere because screaming, and every day gets better.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it get easier? Obviously, you've had four. So do you think, like, with your second, third, fourth, you're a bit more like, right, I've got this, I know how this works. Does it get easier? Or are you thrown back into that newborn bubble where you're like, oh my God, this is crazy?
Yeah, I think a mixture of both, really, because I think you can never relive that firstborn baby, because you don't have anything else to, you know, to focus on, like your school runs or a toddler running around. So that, it's really hard. Like baby number two, three and four were completely different. But yeah, I absolutely got straight back into that newborn baby bubble and was like, shit.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? Oh my goodness, I'm so sleep deprived. And actually, if anyone's followed me for a little while, the Hattie, my baby number four, I call her Satan's love child, because she is like something that I've never, ever experienced before. She is just so unbelievably sassy. She still doesn't sleep through the night properly.
Oh, goodness.
And she's just like, I breastfed her for 22 months. That was the longest. I did a year with the others. She was my longest, you know, she's just completely rejigged how I saw having a baby.
Oh,
so yes. I think every time's different. Like, you know, I've got some friends that have had, you know, second and third, and they're like, yeah, it's just exactly the same. I feel exactly the same. And I was like, oh, I felt absolutely mental going back in it. But obviously I was more experienced, and I was older as well, so I could trust my instincts more, led a lot by intuition, mm-hmm. and knew and set boundaries more, because I think with your first one you kind of listen to everyone's advice. Like, what do you think of this, what do you think of that, and then you're like, oh my goodness, I don't know. Whereas I think when you have multiple babies, you're a bit more like, okay, that's interesting, but this feels right for me. So that was my kind of biggest learning curve, is that I kind of grew more as a experienced mother and was trusting my instinct more. But yeah, I was thrown back in that newborn bubble, like, oh my goodness, what have I done?
Yeah. And what are the age gaps between them? Like, how has that been having a newborn and like three others? What are the ages?
Yes, yeah, so I call them my first crop and my second crop. So I've my elder two, I have a 15, 12, and then a soon to be 6-year-old, and then Hattie is 2.5.
Aww.
So the eldest, Elliot, he doesn't really get involved much with the little ones because he's like so too cool to do that. But my daughter Sienna is 12 and she's amazing. Like if Hattie's kicking off and I need to have a shower, she'd be like, "Don't worry, Mum, I'll play with her on the trampoline," and so that's amazing. But I don't know, I think because I don't know any different, and that's the same with every mum that goes on to have multiple children, you don't know any different, so you just get on with it and you do it and you find a great routine and you find a great way of managing it.
Yeah. You find what works for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
What are the most common worries you come across? Like, what do people come to you? What's their biggest worries of motherhood, would you say?
I would say most women that come to me, because I'm a bit more of a holistic approach, say to me things like, my friends have said that I should do this with breastfeeding, or my friends should say that my baby should be sleeping this amount of hours, or even that they're personally feeling a little bit down and they feel that they are losing themselves as a mother. And they just feel like a lot of clients come to me and say, like, is this it for like the next 3 years? And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? And they're like this hamster wheel. And it's trying to help them feel that, embrace this period of time, because you will look back, but finding ways for them to find themselves or to find this new evolved, empowered woman that they've become.
Yeah.
So it's a multitude of things. Most of it all leads down to, I always say to them, well, what do you want to do? Do you feel that's best? And when you've coached them a little bit, they often tell themselves the answer. Well, I actually am happy with co-sleeping with my baby, or I'm quite happy still breastfeeding my baby to sleep and she's two, or I'm happy formula feeding my baby and letting my husband get up and do it through the night. Right, well, that's right for you. And that's your decision. That's how you feel empowered.
Oh, that's amazing. I feel like everyone needs an empowerment coach, particularly like in that first, like myself, I'm week 5. Yeah, 5 and a few days now. And you get so much like unsolicited advice. And then when you do try and seek advice, it's almost too much and you feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So like you said, like you do know deep down what's right for you, don't you? So it's having someone kind of guide you to that, which I think
Yeah, absolutely. It's just finding, I think we lead a lot by what other people say nowadays, that we don't dig deep into that inner compass and think, does that feel right or does this feel right? And you kind of have to listen to yourself. And when you're so sleep deprived and you're hungry and your baby is, you know, screaming for hours on end, you sometimes can't dig into that because you're leading by that flight or fear.
I think that's what I find most difficult, actually. When Penelope gets really upset and I've fed her, like changed her nappy, like comforted her, and I'm cuddling her, and I can't get her to stop crying, I feel like my anxiety really goes through the roof. I'm like, what can I do? What am I doing wrong? What does she need? Is she not feeling well? And it's horrible, isn't it, that like not knowing. I think that's like one of my triggers. It really affects me.
I think that's a trigger for most new mums who have a baby that's really vocal, because you think like, oh my goodness, what's the matter with you? I fed you, you're clean, and it's going through that process of elimination. Are they are they overtired? Are they a little bit gassy? Have they got a sore tummy? And what's my diet like? You know, have I been necking a load of cheese and milk, and is that not agreeing with them? And just going through that process of elimination. But you will eventually find ways that instantly soothe her within a few minutes, whether that's popping her in a sling and just stepping out the door. Although I'm not sure, you're still a bit too early to be wearing a sling at the moment, aren't you? I think with your C-section.
Yeah, I have like once or twice, I'm a bit like naughty, really. I feel like some days I'm like, oh, can I do this? And I kind of push myself, and then I'm like, no, I better not. I get my I've got my like six week review on mm-hmm. Friday, so I'll be able to ask questions then of like how much more I can do, and I think I'll be able to drive at some stage, well, in the next few days, hopefully.
Yeah, that'd be good.
But there's not enough sort of aftercare. Like I have found that I'm just constantly Googling, and my boyfriend tells me off. He's like, stop researching, Holly, stop looking at, you know, social media. And I'm like, actually, no, I found some really great connections like yourself who are empowering me and giving me the knowledge that I haven't received, you know, from the doctors and midwives. Like I've been discharged after having this huge surgery, and I honestly don't know. I don't know if I can have a bath. That's something I looked at the other day. Can you have a bath after having a C-section? Should I massage my scar? Can I do stretches? Like, do you know what I mean? I've just had,
yeah.
You don't get any sort of knowledge or aftercare, which is really surprising.
It's a shame, isn't it? And I think, like you're saying, that's why social media is a really great platform to be able to find some professionals that are experts in that niche. It's like the lady that I mentioned to you the other day, Hannah Johnson Therapy. She's actually coming on my podcast in a couple of weeks.
Oh, amazing.
But I send everyone her way. Go and check her out, because she's the expert in C-section recovery. And also going to a local osteopath and having a mummy MOT, which is really, really important postpartum.
I really want to do that, actually. I would definitely be doing that.
Yeah, just to go and get yourself checked out. And because really, I mean, your doctor might be amazing, but my doctor, I took Hattie with me and I came out absolutely furious, because he basically just asked me some random questions. No, he didn't even, you know, check my uterus or anything like that. And he said, you know, any problems with the baby? That's what he said. And I said, well, she's really upset all the time. She's really crying. And he was like, oh, right, well, I think you should perhaps try some formula. I was like, okay, I'm really thankful that I'm not a really young mum who has no idea about life and children and feeding, and that I just shoved a bottle of formula in my baby's mouth, because especially if you're trying to breastfeed, because that's the worst thing you can possibly do. And I was like, you know, so I then sought out some experts on feeding, particularly breastfeeding, and then I changed my diet, and she was absolutely fine. But yeah, there's no advice from your GP, unless they're a really good GP, but they're under so much stress, aren't they, and strain.
Yeah, I've been on the phone so many times already to mine, and yeah, I said to my mum earlier, can't keep phoning the doctors, because at the moment Penelope's poo's really runny and green, and she had a bit of like diarrhea, and I don't know if that's something I'm eating. And again, I'm like researching and Googling, who do I call? And I've called up like the lactation consultants of a hospital, and they've actually been quite good, but they've told me to call the GP again. So I'm kind of going around in a circle at the moment, trying to find out what's going on. But yeah, the aftercare is just not quite there, unfortunately.
No, it is such a shame. It really is a shame. And I feel in a way that's why like a postpartum maternity nurse/doula is so helpful, because they can help with that slow integration into that postpartum period and help you kind of find those answers as well. I think that's really important, because as a new mum, you're thinking, oh my goodness, is my baby okay?
Yeah.
And trying to get a doctor's appointment is quite hard anyway.
Yeah.
And especially if you've been signed off from the midwife and then you've been handed over to the health visitors, you're kind of a bit in limbo land as to where to go and what advice to seek.
Yeah, definitely. It's just crazy, isn't it? It's like the biggest thing you can probably do in your life, birthing a child and being a new mum or a new parent, and there just not being sort of any aftercare, or it really baffles me. I'm like, there's so many questions that you have, and you're kind of left to fend for yourself with this newborn.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, it is mad. They almost, I mean, I think pre-COVID there was so many drop-in clinics that you could literally pop into one 3 times a week, because they were within like a 5-mile radius if you could drive. But now I think because of COVID that a lot of them have stopped. But even like the baby groups, you know, most of them have started up again. But I mean, they're another great place to kind of go and chat with other people and get sort of some support, like start building that village of women that you know that are have babies the same age that are potentially going through the same thing as you. That's always something that I sort of suggest to new mums as well, is to try and get out there if you feel up for it.
Yeah, that's so important. I've got a few women that I chat to from some of our antenatal classes, actually. We've got a group, and that's really nice because obviously we're all going through the same thing sort of the same time, maybe a few weeks difference, but
Yeah.
we're all experiencing like the same kind of problems with the feeding and the this and that. And so we just chat on this WhatsApp group, and that's really, really nice. So I'm quite
Yeah.
glad I've got that.
So important. It's
Yeah.
so important to have that kind of tribe of women that you can reach out to and go, oh my goodness, anyone else completely sleep deprived? Do you fancy a walk with a coffee? You know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Oh,
So
I'm so
important.
glad I've finally got the chance to speak to you, and I can't believe I've managed to do it on like my 6th week of being a new mum.
I know.
Not
I was,
fifth
my
week.
God. When you messaged me to say let's do next week, I thought, oh my goodness, she's mental.
I know, literally, the midwife, when she came the day after I'd had Penelope, I opened the door and she was like, "You're like a ninja." She was like, "I can't believe how you're walking. You've just had a section." And then I wasn't taking my medicine like as I should have been, so I was in a bit of pain. And she was like, "You're just crazy." She's like, "You need to slow down and sit down." And I was like, "I'm okay. I'm very like that. I'm so like determined and quite busybodied. It's not always a good thing, I must say." But I'm
Yes.
like, right, let's do this. I want to speak to you. Let's pencil in a
Oh,
day.
yeah, it's been great coming on. Thank you for having me on. It's just nice to chat about, yeah, everything really. We've
I
gone through
know.
everything.
Well, I could have gone on a lot longer, but I'm kind of looking at the time and feeling that twinge in my breast, and I'm like,
Yeah.
yep, I'm due a feed. Better pop
It's
down.
Milky's time. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
But
Yeah.
I'll link all of your social media links and your website at the bottom of the podcast. And yeah, I'll definitely keep sharing because I think what you're doing is amazing. I
Thank
think
you.
everyone should have a birth and motherhood empowerment coach.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And like I said, it's been lovely to chat with you. And no doubt we'll keep chatting on social media.
Oh, definitely.